I want to talk about extension theory for Maltzeff varieties. It's based on the last chapter of the Maltzeff variety spring lecture notes, which many people cite and nobody ever reads. So I'd like to remind you what's in that last chapter. Here's the outline of the talk. I'll just remind you about Maltzeff varieties, tell you the most basic way of thinking about centrality in them. Just tell you about one or two of my conventions, mainly a little bit more combinatoric than you might be used to, for example, in simplicial language or in monads. Monadic cohomology, again, just remind you about that, although, of course, we've been well prepared for it. And then I want to introduce you to the horticulture that lets you do a general extension theory in any Maltzeff variety. So we get bare thumbs, we know how to build extensions, we know when they're going to exist, and we get all the good stuff in general Maltzeff varieties. In particular, we'll focus on the concept of an obstruction to an extension, and then showing that we can build an extension if and only if the obstruction is, if and only if the extension is unobstructed. I won't have time to talk about the other stuff, about the classifying extensions or bare sums, but that should be in the proceedings, hopefully. So start to remind you about Maltzeff varieties, and all this talk I will put in that context. A lot of people have a lot of fun extending to this to more general categories. I don't want to spoil your fun, so let's leave it in a very universal algebra language today. So a Maltzeff variety is a variety of universal algebras with a ternary parallelogram completion. Congruence relations permute. Congruence join is relational product. Reflexive subalgebras are squares, are congruences. That ties in, of course, to what Dominique was mentioning. Examples, the classical examples, groups, rings, Lie algebras, and then Heiting algebras, orthomodular lattices, and quasigroups. My personal interest is in quasigroups. The difference is that quasigroups, these are just non-associative groups, no identity, there's no forgetful functor to the category of pointed sets. And that seems to be important. For example, in physics, Copernicus and Einstein tell us that space-time is not pointed. So trying to develop all the sort of usual structure theory that you have to quasigroups. Now, as a graduate student at Cambridge a very long time ago, and I said I wanted to look at quasigroups, people said, oh, don't do that. You know, there's no structure to them. You should go ahead and classify finite simple groups. But with the perspective of time, I'm glad I didn't take them up on that. So, quick reprise of centrality. This is general centrality, not necessarily in a Maltzeff variety. So there are a lot of horrible axioms there, and let me just tell you what that really means. So the key thing is if we have x, y, x prime, y prime, what is it? We have a congruence relation beta, so x and y are related by beta, x prime and y prime are related by beta. Think of beta as an object itself, and then centrality, another congruence gamma, centralizes beta if we can sort of think of these two pairs in beta being set up in a parallel frame. Sort of differential geometry idea of parallel translation. So x and x prime, y and y prime are related by gamma, and this picture with the rectangle is what we write as xy, gamma on beta, x prime, y prime. So all those axioms just say that what you expect from your geometrical intuition. For example, if you have two things based on x, both related to xy, then they coincide on the y prime. That's a general definition. In a Maltsev variety, a lot of nice things happen. The centering congruence, this relation gamma on beta, is uniquely determined. That's not true in general. And there's the largest congruence, eta of alpha, which centralizes alpha uniquely. So think of in groups, you have a centralizer of any normal subgroup. And eta is nothing to do with a unit. It's just that when this stuff was being typed, it was on an old manual typewriter, and there were only a few Greek letters, and eta was one of them. Oh, save it for posterity. Yes. conventions, perhaps you're all used to thinking of simplicial stuff as coming from geometry, but for quasi groups, that's of interest to a lot of combinatorialists. So I think of it in a very combinatorial way, operations on words. So the epsilons are the operations that excise a letter from a word. So for example, epsilon 1-3 will excise the second letter of a word of length 3. The deltas double up, so delta 1-2 will double up the second, we start counting at 0, double up the second letter in a letter of in a word of length 2. So we think of simplicial objects as homogeneous, as heterogeneous algebras, essentially. That's our take on it. Extend truncated simple objects by just tacking on simplicial kernels, and don't worry about saying the word truncated. Perhaps, you know, in the background of the history, what was there to use in order to get an extension theory for quasigroups or for general Maltsev varieties? Most of the classical stuff that we heard about is pointed. I was very grateful to have Jack Duskin's work on interpretation of triple cohomology. That was about the only thing that was out there at the time that didn't assume that everything was pointed. And this last part, in a Maltsev variety V, modules, of course, we just think about a module over an object R is an abelian group in the slice category over R. A couple of examples. Well, the split extension for a module over a ring or over a group, that, of course, we heard about earlier. An example that comes out of the centrality is if you have a self-centralizing congruence alpha on an algebra T, then the quotient of alpha by the centralizing congruence there, that projects down onto the T to the alpha and gives you such a module. And also, if we have a whole simplicial object, then if we've got a module over B0, just pull it back. We'll talk about modules over the simplicial object. Monadic cohomology, the only non-standard thing perhaps is a sort of combinatorial or universal algebra way of doing this. Oh, by the way, when you're working on associative algebra, you get lots of brackets and you want to get rid of them. So non-associative people tend to put the mappings on the right so you can read in natural order from left to right, use Łukasiewicz notation and not worry about brackets. So that's what I'm doing a lot here. That's part of the conventions. So if we've got an algebra A, let AG be the free V algebra over the set of elements there, but with braces put around, and then you could gradually build up with lots and lots of braces. And so in this combinatorial way of looking at things, the epsilon JN deletes the jth brackets, counting one way, and the deltas double up the jth braces. And this notation, of course, you've already seen, derivations from RGN to E for a module E, that's just the abelian group in the slice category. And we have the differential here, and define cohomology just as co-cycles over co-boundaries. And I'm not sure whether you want to count this as n or as n minus 1. I guess it's not too critical. You want to make it look like classical algebra or not. Okay, now let's start the horticulture. What do we mean by a seeded simplicial object? Well, it's truncated at dimension 2. There are two surjectivity conditions, and the going from B2 to B1, there are two epsilons there, and then the kernel of one has to be the centralizer of the other. So how do we grow modules from seeds? If you have a seeded simplicial object B star, well, one way to do this, let C be the equalizer of the epsilon 0, 2 and the epsilon 1, 2, and then define a congruence V on that by these sort of projections there and the object C's at C prime that you have related by the care epsilon 0, 2 ring kernel epsilon 1, 2, centralizing onto kernel epsilon 0, 2 intersection kernel 1, 2. And we talk about the B0 module, or the B star module, that is grown by the seeded simplicial object B star. And if you don't like the definition, you can also think of it just as given by centrality, by the composite, the join of the two congruences there, centralizing the intersection. So whenever you have a seeded simplicial object, you have a module that grows out of it. And then how does this tie in with extension theory? Well, if you have a congruence alpha on a V algebra T that plants a seeded simplicial object, so there's a seeded simplicial object associated with that, so alpha, eta alpha on alpha, two projections down onto T to the eta of alpha, and then all the way down to T alpha ring eta alpha, and just coming back by what you get from the diagonal from quotient of T by eta alpha back to alpha. And this grows in the way that we saw before, a module over T alpha ring eta alpha, just same kind of structure, alpha intersection eta alpha, centralized by alpha ring eta alpha, you project down onto T alpha ring eta alpha. Okay, so what's the obstruction to extension, trying to build an extension? So you have a seeded simplicial object B star, and you have a homomorphism, regular epimorphism P0 onto the bottom. We can define an instruction associated with that. We extend P to a simple simplicial map from the sort of pre-resolution simplicial object to B star. However you like to do that is fine. The obstruction is going to be independent of how you choose to do that. The module grown by the seeded simplicial object becomes a module over the free resolution, or all the places in the free resolution. Define a map D from third power of from the third dimension to B3 to the module by taking the Malthus operation of epsilon 0, 3, 1, 3, 2, 3, and then take the corresponding congruence class V there. So that's a well-defined homomorphism, and then the obstruction is just the cohomology class of that in the triple cohomology. So, how do we build extensions, or when will extensions exist? Extensions exist often only if the data that we have is unobstructed. So technically, and hopefully in the proceedings there'll be a more elegant formulation than this. This is much closer to the original version in the Malthus varieties notes. If we're given a seeded simplicial object B star, regular FEP0 going to B0 from R, we want to build the extension of R. Well, there is a congruence alpha on an algebra T planting B star, and realizing the P0 that we have from R to B0 explicitly as T to the alpha to T to the alpha ring eta alpha. So R is going to be the quotient object T to the alpha. We want to know about building the algebra T with that module structure built in. Well, that happens if and only if the P D0 is unobstructed in the sense that we just saw. How do we prove that? Well, in the only direction, if we do have the algebra T, we set up this picture with the free resolution, the module stuff grown by T, and the congruence alpha on T, and then the quotient R, and then we do a diagram chase through that picture. It's essentially what we saw earlier on this morning for groups, and it's just kind of interpreted in this unpointed general context. Conversely, how do you actually construct algebras? This is what people like to know. Well, let me just summarize briefly, since time is fairly limited, that we get the algebra T as a quotient of the pullback of the epsilon 1 from B2 to B1 and the P1, whichever P1 you like to have, from RG to B1. Roughly speaking, the alpha shows up as some kind of lift of the epsilon, and the eta of alpha shows up as some kind of lift of the P1. Okay, well, those are all the slides I have to show you. Maybe just finish by saying then that, there's an extension if and only if the data is unobstructed. We can then classify the extensions, and it looks very classical. So we have a group of singular extensions, bare sum sort of defined in a natural way using the Maltsev operation, and then that abelian group of singular extensions acts regularly on the space of non-singular extensions. So it's all very classical. What about classifying obstructions? That's not quite so nice. Don't forget we have this assumption about the eta alpha essentially being the centralizer of alpha. And that's the property which means that the classification of obstructions isn't quite so nice. It works fine in the classical way for extensions of a non-trivial group, but if you get varieties of algebras with a lot of centrality in them, and perhaps commutative Mufang loops is one of the nicest examples of that, then the classification of obstructions in this sense doesn't work very well. Duskin has given us interpretations of all the monadic cohomology groups, so that's perhaps a natural interpretation for those groups, and it would be nice to have some more general classification of the obstructions in this context. But again, that's not something that anybody's looked at. Okay, thank you.